Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and this week I'm going to be trying something very different. For the first time in 120-plus episodes, I am going to try to fly solo. There's going to be no Daft J, there's going to be no Shane Heron, no Martin Slam Duncan, and I think that's, for me, much more difficult than I would imagine, because as much as we talk about the stuff that we love in comic book shops or with friends, talking to yourself for a while, knowing that someone's going to be listening to you, you can easily get off the rails and go on tangents. So I'm going to try to keep this as succinct as possible. I'm going to rip a page out of Adam Chapman's book from Comic Shenanigans, where he does his weekly comic book reviews or sometimes a flashback review of stuff that he does. And he goes 20, 25 minutes on his own, and it's actually entertaining and informative. For this week, I went to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp on my own. Daft J, my regular co-host, did not really have much of an interest to go watch it. So on a weekday afternoon after work, I popped into the movie theater, got a chance to see the movie, just me, pretty much by myself in the theater with a bag of popcorn, and I got to take in the movie. Now, as far as superhero movies go, or superhero characters go, Ant-Man isn't high on my list of characters who I either follow in the comic books or I have a real emotional connection to. The first Ant-Man movie is probably on the bottom half of my list when it comes to favorite Marvel cinematic movies. It was entertaining. It has a lot of heart. It's funny. But it's not one that I ever get the urge or desire to see repeatedly. Some people never want to see a movie again after they've seen it the first time. But when it comes to this stuff, us geeky guys, we like to rewatch it, catch things that we haven't seen or maybe would have missed the first time. So the Ant-Man movie, I enjoyed it enough to go and see the sequel. But Daft J didn't. She didn't really care for the first one. This time out, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. So what's cool about it is the universe is expanding. More characters are going to be added to the roster, as it were, and potentially added to the Avengers roster. Now, a little comic book history for me, when it comes to Ant-Man, I don't know that much of the character's legacy other than what I do read in the Avengers. My first real impression of Ant-Man comes from the Ultimates line, written by Mark Millar and drawn by Brian Hitch, which has heavily influenced the MCU in a lot of ways, because in that particular book, the way certain people were drawn, for instance, Nick Fury in that book was drawn purposely to look like Samuel L. Jackson, and this is years before there was even an inkling that they were going to be making an Avengers movie. So when you read that book now, you really can see the influence of what they've pulled from it and added to the movie. And Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne in that movie are a couple. They're married. And Hank Pym, it's safe to say, is a controversial character when it comes to the Avengers. He's got a bit of a identity crisis. He's infamously known for having domestic abuse in his marriage to Janet Van Dyne. They are founding members of the Avengers, but he is a controversial guy in the comics. He's switched identities from Giant Man to Ant-Man to Yellow Jacket. And it's just never been a character who I've wanted to go and search out for more. I like him in the team setting. So having him presented in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a older fellow who was Ant-Man once upon a time with Janet Van Dyne being the Wasp, but not a founding member of the Avengers, and as well something that is noteworthy in the comic books, Hank Pym is actually the character who invents or designs what would later become Ultron, and by proxy what becomes the Vision. So he's a very important character in the comics in regards to the Avengers universe and mythology. So to see him not be that guy in these movies is different. And it's fine. They make it work in a logical way. And I think Scott Lang as a character is a little bit more palatable. Paul Rudd brings the humor to it that is enjoyable. And in this case, Scott Lang, Ant-Man, might be more of a fan preference to somebody donning the mantle of Ant-Man as opposed to seeing Hank Pym. So they've made it work well. In this movie, it being a sequel to the first Ant-Man, obviously, the first Ant-Man, it's a sequel. It's not so much a heist movie as the first one was. I think that's another part of the joy that people had in the first Ant-Man movie. It was offbeat. It wasn't a universe affecting plot line. It was a little bit more small scale, no pun intended. And it was digging a little bit more into the smaller subplot storylines within the Marvel Universe that could pay off later when everything comes together. As if you've seen this movie, you know exactly what we're talking about here. So this time around, it's picking up where it left off in regards to Janet Van Dyne being caught in the quantum realm, which in the first movie, Scott Lang shrunk down so tiny, subatomic level, where he's in the quantum realm where, according to Hank Pym, Michael Douglas's character, you can't come back from there. And that's where Janet Van Dyne was. But Scott Lang, we all know, comes back from the quantum realm, and it creates the notion in Hank's mind that she is Janet Van Dyne is retrievable from the quantum realm. And so this movie is pretty much centered around them trying to rescue her from there. And of course, there's subplot lines. In this movie, it begins with Scott Lang being on house arrest because of everything that went down with Civil War and how there is the Hero Registration Act and how him going to Germany to fight against the other half of the Avengers in support of Captain America. He's been on house arrest. He's got the ankle bracelet, and it opens up very charming with him and his daughter Cassie reenacting somewhat of a heist. He's kind of designed the house that he lives in to create a storyline or something where they're kind of doing like an imaginary heist together, where he's built these little tunnels and there's what's the guy's name? Michael Pena's on the outside kind of playing along with them, making the inside of the tunnel and what have you. If you see it, you'd understand. I can't explain it as well. But him and Cassie are basically together playing, enjoying each other's father and daughter time, reenacting some of the scenes from the first movie, pretending both to be Ant-Man and Wasp-esque characters, as it were. But you realize that he's been stuck in the house for quite some time. He's just about to be released from his house arrest, and then he'll be able to enter the real world again and be able to be with Cassie and what have you. And he's been, I don't want to say shunned, but his relationship with Hank Pym and Hope Van Dyne, Hank's daughter, there's been a little bit of static between them because he took the suit to Germany in the Civil War movie and used it against their wishes and kind of shined a spotlight on them and what they might be up to. So they've kind of had to go into hiding or exile, as it were. So it's caused a rift between them. That's a better word. There's a rift between them. But because Scott Lang had entered the quantum realm at one point, he's having these little moments or flashbacks of communication and messages sent to him from Janet Van Dyne. And I don't remember how they figure it out. Oh, that's right. I remember now. It's very obvious. Scott Lang sends a message to Hank saying, listen, I don't know why this happened, but I had a vision, and I'm pretty sure it was Janet trying to communicate with me. This was the vision of what she was trying to show me. There was a little girl playing hide and go seek, which of course is Hope Van Dyne. And in the next scene, you see that Scott Lang has woken up. He's outside of his house, having broken the house arrest law. And it should be mentioned that he is being heavily monitored by a FBI agent named Jimmy Woo. Is that correct? I think it's Jimmy Woo. And there's a lot of back and forth humor and banter between the two. He plays a pretty pivotal character in the movie. So he's been taken out of his house 2 days before he's going to be exonerated from his charges. And they say to him, what was the vision you saw? If you've got a way to get a message, or if you're communicating with Janet or my mother or my wife that we've been searching for all this time, what is it? What did she say? Because in the meanwhile, between the movies, Hope and her father, Hank, have been creating a quantum tunnel, as it were, to try to retrieve her mother out of the Janet Van Dyne, out of the quantum realm. I'm going on a bit of a tangent, so let me just pull up the Wikipedia plotline. I'm going to try to summarize it there a little bit quicker instead of going off the top of my head. So Hank and Hope are both on the verge of creating a stable tunnel that they'll be able to retrieve Janet. That's what I said. But they're missing a part. And the part that they're going to get needed for this tunnel, it comes from a black market dealer named Sonny Birch, who is a character in the Ant-Man mythology in the comic books. Don't know much about them, like I said. But he realizes that whatever they're building, there's potential profit for him to make out of it. So he double-crosses them. While they're in the midst of a double-cross, you see Hope become the Wasp character, use her costume. Hank is in a van monitoring it as Scott is sitting with them. And at this time, you see one of the other villains in the story, Ghost. She's a quantumly unstable masked woman. And she's also trying to retrieve what Hank and Hope are trying to get from Simon Birch. So hijinks ensue. There's a cool battle, fight, all that kind of stuff. So it should be mentioned, because this is the Ant-Man movie and there's the Hank Pym particle, everything can be shrunken or enlarged in regards to vehicles and buildings and the people that are riding in these cars, driving these cars in the building. That's an important part of the plot. So Hank and Hope, they're on the run, but they take a laboratory with them, and it's a building that can shrink into the size of basically a camping cooler that they can drag with them with wheels. And that's been stolen within this melee of Ghost, Simon Birch, and Wasp fighting. So it's important, it's extremely important for them to retrieve this laboratory, because that's where all of the things have been built, and the quantum tunnel is there within this little roller laboratory that can shrink or be enlarged with the Hank Pym particle. Now, I don't want to go through the entire movie. I'm just kind of giving the gist of the plot, what the purpose of these characters, what they're actually going for. The main storyline is they're trying to get Janet Van Dyne out of the quantum realm. And in the process, there's a couple of subplots and characters who have their own interests in also using this technology that Hank Pym has discovered and is about to use. Bill Foster, I should mention, Lawrence Fishburne's character is Bill Foster, who many who read comic books may or may not know, is known as Goliath. If you've read the Civil War comic book from Mark Millar, he actually was killed in the battle in Civil War. But he makes an appearance in this movie, a cameo. It's a nice little cameo referencing the connection between him and Hank Pym, their friendship, their relationship. He plays a pretty important role in the movie and in his relationship with certain characters that you're introduced to throughout the way. Now, as far as the movie's concerned, I enjoyed myself. It was fun. There's the humor. There's the hijinks that you get. There's the fun of seeing things, you know, certain Hot Wheels car, as it were, you know, your dream Hot Wheel car as a kid blowing up and being something that's drivable, seeing buildings shrink, seeing Scott Lang become, it's in the preview, Scott Lang become the giant man in the water, and all of these different little things about the powers and how they affect him. His suit malfunctioning offers a lot of humor. So there's insights into potentially what can be done with this technology that they're discovering by bringing Janet Van Dyne out. Now, the overall, I'm trying to think of the right word here, the stakes, as it were, they're not universe destruction. It's not a whole country like Sokovia being and people being discarded or destroyed. But the pieces that they're putting into place could potentially be very useful and important in later and subsequent Marvel movies. And I think that's that's the thing that you take away from this, is that you don't go into this movie and you're not going to have, I don't feel, for me personally, I didn't have the experience that I had with, let's say, a Winter Soldier, where it takes the character seriously. It tells a very pivotal story, character building story that I can watch again and again. And it the benchmark set for it is so high that it's kind of become the standard bearer for me with a movie like that, or for the first Iron Man, for instance. It is a lot of fun. What I like about the Ant-Man movie is the heart that it has in the relationship between Scott Lang and his daughter, between Hank Pym and his daughter. It's a little bit more familial that you may not see in the other Marvel Cinematic movies. So that part of it I do really like a lot. The fact that Janet Van Dyne and Hank Pym, by the way, Janet Van Dyne is played by Michelle Pfeiffer, which is kind of cool. It's good the way that they've introduced these characters to make them work in the universe they built, but it's also kind of strange knowing how pivotal they are to being members, founding members of the Avengers, being leaders of the Avengers at times. So to see them, that they're not going to be used in that way for potential stories, is, I could take it or leave it, but you think of all of the things they could do and it's kind of disappointing. I'd give this movie a 7 out of 10. It's very enjoyable. It's fun to sit through at the theater. It's a popcorn movie. It's not, for me, it wasn't a Black Panther moment. Like I said, a Captain America Winter Soldier moment where you feel very, like you've seen something that you're always going to remember. But it is a lot of fun. The characters that return, such as Michael Peña's character, Lewis, he's still in top form, being, you know, used as a an ancillary character that brings humor, that, you know, hits you with that line at the right time. The other guys, such as T.I. and David Dasmalchian, who were in the first Ant-Man movie, aren't quite as pivotal in this one. They don't play as much of a role, but they're still there. Hannah John Kamen is Ava Starr, or Ghost, who, my fear of her as a villain or what her motives were weren't as, it didn't have me at the edge of my seat. Neither did Sonny Birch. You were more concerned with the rescuing of Janet Van Dyne. So I guess the stakes not being as big, as I mentioned before, doesn't get you as emotionally invested in the journey. But it is a fun time. You do see a lot of cool special effects. And again, it's one of those things where it's a superhero movie. So you got to have that suspension of disbelief as you're watching this. But I guess there's some things. I mean, a kid swinging through the city is ridiculous. A blind man with extrasensory powers that can jump off of buildings and live. It's all silly when you really break it down. But the shrinking and the things getting, you know, that back and forth thing, it kind of takes me out of it just a little bit, because it's used so much and conveniently that it, I don't know. I guess the things that you allow yourself to, that suspension after a while is being tested so much that maybe for some they love that part of it, that you can see a Hello Kitty Pez dispenser explode and be used as a weapon. After, it's cool, but after a while it's kind of like, okay, this is, I'm being taken out of the story a little bit. That for me, that's just for me. And again, I'm not as invested in Ant-Man's comic book mythology. So when I watch it, the good thing is I go into it without having any expectations. I'm just able to enjoy it. But then at the same time, I don't have the emotional investment to leave it feeling like they really got that right, or I really like that they included this thing that's important. But overall, it was an enjoyable time. And if you like a superhero movie with humor, and if you like Paul Rudd, and I mean, you got Michael Douglas, you got Michelle Pfeiffer, you got Lawrence Fishburne. It's a good cast. It's a good movie. It's a lot of fun. And of course, Evangeline Lilly is the Wasp. Her and seeing Ant-Man and the Wasp, that's a cool thing. Again, we're living in a golden age where we would have never thought that they'd make an Ant-Man movie of all things, right? We're happy that they made an X-Men once upon a time, or even a Blade movie. So having said that, it's important to now consider this can't just be a throwaway movie, right? Marvel doesn't do anything without referencing something from each movie, putting the pieces together. It should be mentioned, actually, that the technology that Hank Pym is using in this movie is originally referenced in the first Avengers film. There's a scene on, what's the thing called there that the S.H.I.E.L.D. uses? The helicarrier, the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. Mark Ruffalo's character, Bruce Banner, is referencing a certain, I can't remember what it's called now. It's a spectrometer, whatever that is, a spectrometer. So there is, again, from a 2012 movie, there's continuity in this movie from 2018 in the Ant-Man and Wasp, something that you may not even pay attention to, but obviously they're trying to connect something here. This movie ends, of course, with them rescuing Janet Van Dyne. She's able to harness the power from the quantum realm, which is in itself them going into the quantum realm and seeing that there is a universe within a universe within a universe sort of thing, and seeing the potential of what could be. That was extremely cool. I got to say, that was cool. And throughout the movie, they throw a couple of little hints of foreshadowing by referencing other movies. I think there's a scene from Animal House, I think it was, with Donald Sutherland. And they're referencing, you know, on the tip of your fingernail, you could have a whole universe right there. So there's a bit of foreshadowing in regards to where they're going with this. So they retrieve Janet Van Dyne, of course. The family is reunited, happy ending. And she's able to harness this power from the quantum realm to heal or to use in different fashions. So they within the mid-credits scene, you know you have to stay at the end of a Marvel movie to catch the end credits. It is important to note, I didn't mention this before. Before I continue, this movie takes place before Infinity War. That's important to remember as you're watching this movie. Infinity War hasn't happened yet. So in the mid-credits, they're going to send Scott Lang back into the quantum realm to retrieve some of the power from there and kind of bottle it up, bring it back to study or to use. And while he is sent into the quantum realm, Thanos snaps his fingers. And everybody that is supposed to help bring Scott Lang back to regular-sized world, as it were, I don't know a better way to put it, they all disappear, a la the end of Infinity War, you know, fade to dust, as it were. So Scott Lang is stuck currently in the quantum realm, and that's where you're left off. So clearly, him being there, having some sort of ability to manipulate a subatomic universe, time, the power that they found down there, who knows how they're going to use it. It really opens the door for an endless realm of potential. So with that in mind, you kind of see they've used this movie as a chess piece towards the bigger overarching story. Is it essential for you to watch this? I don't think so. But it's cool if you do. Just like a comic book tie-in to a six-part story. You read all the other parts, you get all the little details, and it may add or take away. Depends on your perspective. So that's my overall review of the movie. I don't want to get into too much spoilers. I did. I know I spoiled the end because it's kind of the key moment of the movie. I should have mentioned that before. I'll write it in the opener of the show. Or in the show description before you download it. Big spoiler. So that's it. That's my review for Ant-Man. Thank you guys for listening. I hope I didn't bore you to death. Me being solo, I'm going to have Daft J back very soon. Of course, Shane and Martin will make an appearance. And we're going to take a little break from the Cave of Solitude. So before the break occurred, I wanted to make sure that I did put some content on there. because, you know, we were on a roll for a little bit. We had a couple of really good episodes back to back to back, and summer happens, you get busy, and before you know it, long stretches go by without putting any content or getting in the groove of keeping the podcast going. So we will be back with some really cool, different episodes. We're going to be traveling for a little bit. We're going to be live on location where we travel. We're going to come back with really fun content. And of course, the month of August is going to be busy with a lot of comic book stuff, Fan Expo at the end of the month. So we're going to have all kinds of content ready for you. So again, thank you for listening to The Cave of Solitude. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and email us, give us a review on iTunes, tell us what you think, tell me if you think I'm crazy and all the things that I missed in the Ant-Man movie is why you think it should have gotten a better score. Thank you everybody for listening. I'm Eric Anthony, and we will be back soon.
Yo, the best that there is of what we do, E and Daft J. It's the Cave of Solitude. Reaction from the masses after they heard me rap is like Galactus. Sent that surfer to Earth to serve him Kirby crack. The black science of rhyme and rhyme.